From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Top of the Hill, Daly City.
Noe Valley.
San Francisco, Outer Mission.
I live in San Pablo, California.
Coming up, in honor of Memorial Day, we'll visit a special apartment building in San Francisco for chronically homeless vets.
It's beautiful for me because I'm in bed. I can just step out of bed and go right in my bathroom. I enjoy that.
Then, from the San Quentin Prison Report, a war veteran and a veteran of the streets talk about how they deal with post-traumatic stress disorder.
If you weren't carrying a gun and inflicting violence, then you were a victim.
And a former soldier shares what it was like to come out of the closet while still in the Army.
Eventually, you know, the important people in Post knew I was gay, and they all realized I'm no threat to security, so they just looked the other way.
Stories from the home front and beyond on a special Memorial Day edition of Cross Currents. Today is Memorial Day. It's a day when we honor those who have served and also acknowledge how we might better serve them, especially those who don't have a place to call home. About a third of the nation's chronically homeless are veterans. The largest percentage of those vets live in California. And in San Francisco, it's likely that more than 700 veterans will sleep on the street tonight.
Homelessness will never be an issue where you can cut a ribbon and be confident that nobody will be homeless the next day, right? You know, it's going to be part of our world and society, but you can do better.
That's Bevan Dufty. He runs San Francisco's Housing Opportunity Partnerships and Engagement Program, known as HOPE. In some ways, San Francisco has done better than other major cities as far as housing vets. According to Leon Winston, he's the housing director of Veterans Assistance at the nonprofit Swords to Plowshares. He says the number of homeless vets in the city dropped by 30% between January 2011 and January 2013.
Which is huge. For the same period, Los Angeles had about a 6% drop, and San Diego had about a 9% drop. So that's well ahead of what the rest of the country is doing.
Winston says that's due in part to a new model for tackling this issue, permanent supportive housing, at a place called Veterans Commons. The building is on the edge of the Mission. Over the years, it's been everything from a juvenile hall to a storage facility. Opening it for veterans cost more than $29 million. And now 75 senior veterans with disabilities live in studio apartments there. This supportive housing model isn't unique. Major case studies show that it's been successful at helping people manage after being chronically homeless. But it's the first of its kind in San Francisco. Veterans Commons has been open for a year today, and KALW's Liz Pfeffer went to see how its residents are doing in their new home.
And Crouching Tiger and Hidden Dragon. Bruce Lee, Enter the Dragon. And that was a hook there. I don't know who gave me this hit. I said, Weston, this is too intense for me. It's too much love and strung out with pain. So I don't watch it. That's why I put it at the bottom there.
Jesse Breedwolf loves John Wayne. One of his favorite things is laying in bed with his little portable DVD player on his chest, watching movies.
It's beautiful for me because I'm in bed. I can just step out of bed and go right in my bathroom. I enjoy that.
Breedwolf lucked out on one of the first slots in Veterans Commons.
You about a lucky bastard, you know that is. So that's they call me lucky.
How he got that name is another story. And he's a real storyteller. He's invited me into his immaculate studio to talk.
I have been running quite some time.
Running from pain, the military, two wives and four children, from a chance at becoming a professional boxer. Running even from his given name, which he changed to Breedwolf. And that's another long story. The definition of chronically homeless is an individual with a disabling condition who has been homeless for a year or more, or has had at least four episodes of homelessness in the last 3 years. Breedwolf is 74, and that's been his situation on and off for more than five decades.
I was living in a little dingy hotel on Folsom Street called the CW.
His story started to change about 10 months ago. The CW Hotel was just one of a string of SROs where he'd lived with only the things he could carry. And he hated it. So he started frequenting Swords to Plowshares, a community-based veteran service organization. He was hoping to find a better option, and one day, a counselor had something for him.
So she came up and she showed me this apartment, and I walked and I looked at all the windows and I looked outside. And she said, "What do you think this?" I said, "I'm in love." She says, "Yours." I said, "Oh my God, thank you, thank you."
Leon Winston is the housing director and chief operating officer at Swords to Plowshares. He knows what it's like to be homeless.
Actually, I had two periods of homelessness, one in the mid-80s and again in the early 90s. The second time I ended up going to the VA hospital, and they referred me to Swords to Plowshares for transitional housing. And I was very grateful for that.
Winston says places like Veterans Commons are gaining popularity.
And there have been studies that show that the cost of keeping chronically homeless people homeless is actually more expensive than housing them. And so this model of permanent supportive housing really came about and developed in order to address their needs.
The National Alliance to End Homelessness, an organization that analyzes homelessness policies, says that chronically homeless people overuse services like shelters, emergency rooms, hospitals, and police departments. Permanent supportive housing reduces the burden on those systems and, by extension, saves taxpayers thousands of dollars a year. And Winston says there are other human costs to long-term homelessness that make it crucial to find a permanent home.
And long-term homelessness really impacts a person's health and well-being. Just with veterans, those that are chronically homeless may be 65 chronological years old, but are in their 80s from a health profile. And that homeless veterans have serious age-related conditions 10 to 15 years sooner than do their house counterparts. It's a mission of mercy in many ways.
Veterans Commons is the first permanent supportive housing building of its kind in San Francisco. The VA, the San Francisco Department of Public Health, and Swords to Plowshares provide on-site services that will help address some of those chronic issues Winston's talking about.
I mean, homelessness is not a substance abuse or mental health issue. Homelessness is a poverty issue, plain and simple.
David Tallarico is a housing placement specialist at Swords. Often, that means just helping people talk with each other. He says you'd be surprised what someone can accomplish if you give them a set of keys, somewhere to go home to.
One of the biggest barriers is most people have a stigma of a homeless veteran. And so what it is basically to help educate the community on really what a homeless veteran is.
I have the cabinets and a great big stove and the lower cabinets and a huge refrigerator and a microwave.
The units at Veterans Commons have some special features. For example, roll-in showers to accommodate wheelchairs. They're built this way so someone like Jesse Breedwolf can live out the rest of his life here.
I'm at peace in my old age. I love this.
But, he says, the feeling of having nowhere to live will haunt him forever.
That's a strange feeling. I think about the times that I have stood out there on the street and bomb nickel and dime and quarters and pigs to get a drink. So I don't judge people who have big. Sometime if I have something extra, I give a guy a dollar. Because I've had one guy almost in tears. Thank you, man. Thank you. I say, I've been here before you. Already know.
Right now, there are no vacancies at Veterans Commons. Leon Winston of Swords to Plowshares says that's because it's proving what everyone suspected all along. The best way to eliminate homelessness is to give people somewhere permanent to live. For Cross Currents, I'm Liz Pfeffer.
To find out more about Veterans Commons or other services for veterans, go to our website. It's kalw.org and click on Cross Currents. Thank you. This is Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. Many veterans suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder. That's a type of anxiety disorder that can occur after you've seen or experienced a traumatic event. And it's the subject of our next story from the San Quentin Prison Report, KALW's collaboration with inmates from California's oldest prison.
SQPR is a media collective of prisoners and volunteers from the community working together to give voice to personal growth, social transformation, and restorative justice.
About 30% of Iraq and Afghanistan vets treated by the VA are diagnosed with PTSD. But PTSD exists everywhere. Today, we'll hear from a former Marine who survived the trauma of military warfare and a man who survived the trauma and violence that came with growing up in San Francisco's inner city. Even though they come from different backgrounds, their experiences with PTSD are similar. Both men are serving time at San Quentin State Prison. SQPR's Shaw Wallace Stepter has the story.
Ron Self is a 47-year-old inmate and former Marine. He remembers the time during his military service when a U.S. helicopter was shot down.
53 people were killed, two survivors. Even talking about that's kind of distressing. But that was my first experience. When I got to the scene, men were running out of the hole on fire. There was probably 8 or 9 heads laying around, decapitated heads laying around. And what my initial thought was, my feelings were, wow, this is just like TV.
Self spent nearly a decade in the Marines.
I was accepted into the raid company. From there, I went to recon, then force recon and special operations training group, where I functioned in the special operations community with a hostage rescue and prisoner snatch unit.
A common misconception is that PTSD is a disorder that exclusively affects soldiers. But that's just not the case.
My name is Michael Hamilton. I'm 41 years old, born and raised in San Francisco. Western Edition, Fillmore, that's what they call them on the streets. Breaks Project, low-income housing living.
Many of the men who are currently incarcerated come from urban communities like Hamilton's, where unusually high levels of violence and trauma take place on a frequent and consistent basis. In many cases, these experiences are similar to those of soldier and combat veterans.
I can recall a date in summer of 1998 when it was just like a terrible summer, almost like a war zone. 12 of my closest friends were murdered, shot down in the streets.
In that summer alone?
In that summer alone.
And Hamilton says that wasn't even the worst.
One thing that really kind of affected me was one of my best friends that I've known all my life from grade school, you know, just growing up.
Hamilton's friend was shot 5 times in the chest and 3 times in the stomach.
I was right there with him trying to put my hand over some of the holes to keep the blood from, you know, from just everywhere. It was almost like I could smell it. It was like a metal taste almost in my mouth just from witnessing that much blood. Just to see him hit that many times and that much blood and me, with no medical training, I'm trying to stop the flow of blood. I ended up putting him in my car and rushing him to the hospital, where he died probably about 2-3 hours later.
Michael Hamilton and Ron Self both describe extreme traumatic experiences that share many similarities, and as a result, they both developed PTSD.
Basically, a car pull up, automatic gunfire everywhere.
My entire team was killed on that last mission.
And the aftermath of their experiences also echo each other.
So for me, those feelings, they were, I'm past it so I can say it now, but those feelings were suicidal. I just didn't want to deal with it. It was too much for me to deal with.
I didn't want to go to sleep. I didn't want to hang out. I wanted revenge, and that's just a different part of it, but just the not being able to sleep, wanting to be high to just numb the pain and try to get the thoughts out of my mind of what happened to him.
Hamilton says the scene was etched into his memory.
Because I would have the nightmares of not only him being shot, but sometimes the roles would reverse. I would be the one being shot, and he would be trying to help me, and I would never make it to the hospital.
I see that a lot, and it just plays over and over in the dream. And sometimes, which is interesting, is sometimes it's the reverse, where I'm the one that gets blown up and he lives. So, but how the dream plays out, it plays out differently sometimes after everyone's dead, at the end of the dream, they'll all be alive. But then I wake up and they're not.
It will be a while before either man can stop and face the complex issues that came with surviving these traumatic experiences.
I didn't see what other people saw in me, and how I dealt with events in my past was how I dealt with events in my past was by staying in combat. So things didn't have a chance to catch up to me because I was always essentially running from them.
Well, I never addressed it because it was normal. I thought that's how I was supposed to live. I mean, just growing up and in that environment, that's what we did. You know, I didn't have a 9-to-5. My 9-to-5 was carrying my gun and living my life, making sure I come home at night.
In Michael Hamilton's case, failing to address his issue would lead him to develop a mentality that is unfortunately very common in the urban community.
I kind of took the stance on, you know, I'd rather be the hunter instead of being the hunted. So that probably added to a lot more violence that just took place in my life. First and you know, not trusting people and just not taking a chance, and my temper, my patience, any little thing would set me off, and I would use my gun. I wouldn't even hesitate.
Hamilton says he didn't know any other way because he didn't see any other way.
Everybody I know were doing the same thing I was, and if you weren't carrying a gun and inflicting violence, then you were a victim, and you would end up losing your life. So
it wouldn't be until both men came to prison that they began to address their trauma-related issues. For Michael Hamilton, this process would start following a string of disciplinary infractions, and this is when he finally decided that he needed to talk to someone.
It was a number of years after I was incarcerated, just going through different things. Trouble, fights and stuff, you know, just going to the hole. And that's when I realized that something was actually wrong. So I decided to seek counseling first, and that was probably the start of it.
After seeking counseling, it was like a weight had finally been lifted off of his shoulders.
Well, it was just like a great big pressure release, because I've never talked about it before or shared my emotions like that with anyone. So when I started talking with the counselor, it just released a lot of pressure. A lot of guilt came off.
Like Michael Hamilton, it wasn't until Ron Self came to prison, specifically San Quentin, and started to involve himself in a number of self-help groups that he began to take a look at his behavior.
Ironically, it wasn't until I was convicted of attempted murder and spent 15 years in prison, actually 17, the last two of which at this particular prison, San Quentin. There's so many programs here, you can't help but get, if you start going to them, whether you think you need them or not, at some point, something seeps in, something penetrates that exterior that you developed over the years, you know, that armor. And for me, many of the programs here did that.
And what Self learned was that he had to face his past traumas in order to move on with his life.
It's not a question of if it's going to affect you, but when it's going to affect you. And that's with any trauma in life, whether it's related to combat, prison, or growing up in the hood. If you don't face those traumas, they're always going to be there on the peripheral of your life, and they're always going to be influencing you.
This understanding would inspire Self to start his own self-help group here inside of San Quentin called Veterans Healing Veterans from the Inside Out. The primary focus of Veterans Healing Veterans was to provide former soldiers with a safe environment that would allow them to deal with the past traumas they had experienced in their lives. But after launching this program, Self discovered something he hadn't expected.
After going through this process, is what I realized was that if I take the word veteran or marine out of the curriculum and put gang member or urban environment, as I come to find out, is that they experienced the same thing.
And now, Self has expanded this program so that it is offered to anyone who suffers from trauma, especially individuals who come from urban communities, individuals like Michael Hamilton. Reporting from San Quentin State Prison, I'm Shaw Wallace Stepter for SQPR.
The San Quentin Prison Report is a partnership with KALW to bring stories from inside California's oldest prison to the public radio airwaves.
The San Quentin Prison Report is produced by founding director Troy Williams and managing director Nigel Poole. SQPR is made possible by the support of Warden Kevin Chappelle, Public Information Officer Lieutenant Sam Robinson, and Television Specialist Larry Schneider.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan. And now it's time for your stories from San Francisco StoryCorps. Olin Thomas is a retired Army veteran. He says it wasn't until after he joined the military that he realized he was gay. Despite his fears about coming out, he found support in unexpected places. Thomas sat down in the StoryCorps booth at the Contemporary Jewish Museum of San Francisco with his friend Hugo Salinas to tell his story.
Was it hard for you being in the military to keep this from the other superiors or whatever?
Well, it's funny. You know, today we talk about don't ask, don't tell. And this was before that time, although, of course, it was not acceptable to be gay in the military. And I didn't join the military thinking I was going to be gay, so I didn't feel like I was being dishonest. I really finally came out after I had signed up. But my roommate was a Defense Investigative Service agent who was responsible for security. So I had to come clean with him. And, we'd known each other long enough by now. He's like, look, I know you're a loyal American. You're no threat to national security. I'm not going to tell anybody. And then one of his co-agents found out that I was gay. And she said, well, I know you're a good guy. I'm not going to tell anybody. And then someone else found out I was gay. And so eventually, important people in post knew I was gay. And they all realized I'm no threat to security. So they just looked the other way. One point, I got so mad with the Army, which I think happens to everyone at some point. I'm like, I want to get out of the Army. This is a crock of you-know-what. And so I told my commander, I'm gay. I want out. And he goes, oh, do you know how much paperwork that is? My wife is in the theater. We have lots of gay friends. Go home. Just think, sleep it off, He didn't want to do it. So, I just said, okay, well, obviously I'm not supposed to be kicked out of the Army. So that was how it ended.
To learn how you can participate in StoryCorps, go to our website, kalw.org, and click on Cross Currents. That's also where you can subscribe to our podcast. Thusly concludes today's Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Jen Chien, Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Chris Hoff, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Nina Gensler-Debs, Liz Mack, Daphne Matsiaraki, Mary Reese, Stephen Short, and Rachel Wong. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Our senior producer is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Also, thanks to you, KALW is homegrown, locally sourced, independent, commercial-free, listener-supported public radio. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan.